Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Locked On Knicks podcast, which is also going to be episode 10 of the Locked On Bulls podcast. I'm your host, Jared Dubin, and I'm here alongside my buddy Sean Hyken, who covers the Bulls for Bleacher Report, covers the NBA for NBC Sports' Pro Basketball Talk, and is the host of Locked On Bulls for the Locked On Podcast Network. We're going to talk about the players involved in the Derrick Rose trade, as well as Joakim Noah, because there are a bunch of guys that were on the Bulls that are now on the Knicks, and a bunch of guys that were on the Knicks and are now on the Bulls. Sean, what's going on, man?
It's good to be with you, buddy.
Let's start, I guess, because it is the Derrick Rose trade with Derrick Rose. You've been covering that team for a few years now. Obviously, everybody knows all about his injuries, knows all about his capabilities. I'm curious, though, what you saw from him on the court and in his relationships, you know, with the team in the locker room, with the media, things like that, because, you know, that's the kind of thing that gets talked about in like a hush-hush kind of way sometimes, and is not exactly, you know, at the forefront of these discussions.
Well, but the biggest thing that is kind of talked about when it comes to Derrick's personal relationships with his teammates is kind of the speculation about Jimmy Butler. And I have always kind of been of the belief, and this is like just based on them being around in the last couple of years, I think the idea that they didn't get along off the court or that there was any kind of personal tension or dislike between them was pretty overblown. I mean, it was an awkward fit on the court. They're both ball dominant. Neither of them can shoot very well. It was just kind of hard for them to play together. But as far as like them, you know, the speculation that, oh, they didn't get along or they didn't like each other or they, you know, they were tension about who wanted to be the man, like, I think all that stuff was just kind of, that stuff seemed like it was more fiction than it was fact to me. And then, you know, the other thing with Derrick, I mean, you saw Joakim Noah. Like, I mean, I know Noah has these New York ties and all this stuff, and so it kind of made sense on a number of levels for him to go there. But he and Derrick are close. That was a big part of why he signed there. He wanted to play with Derrick. Derrick wanted him there. And, you know, for all these years, Derrick had sat out however many games he sat out with his injuries. And other guys were playing through injuries, and it would have been really easy for somebody on the team to come out and say, oh, well, you know, we're all sacrificing and Derrick is not doing enough for the team. And everybody had it back every single time about that stuff.
Yeah, with him and Butler, I mean, both of them always professed that, you know, the rumors about they're not getting along or there being tension with them were untrue. Both of them, to a man, said that every single time they were asked about it. Obviously, that's what most people are going to say. But, you know, several other people have said similar stuff. So it's possible it was just something where, you know, people were sort of projecting it onto them as, you know, like representative of, you know, the schism within the Bulls franchise in that they needed to move on and start a new era, but couldn't really do that unless and until Rose left.
Right, and the natural way, I mean, yes, it was absolutely true that this group had just kind of run its course, and you saw this last year with them having the same team that won 50 games a year ago, and then they didn't make the playoffs this year with essentially the same roster, but just under a new coach. And so, of course, the easiest way to point to why it didn't work out is just to say, oh, well, the two, you know, Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, neither of them wanted to give up being the star. Jimmy had issues with other teammates, kind of not accepting that, you know, he was trying to be the leader of the team. Yeah, but that was more guys like Noah and Gibson and guys that had been in the trenches since the, you know, Derrick Rose MVP years were kind of like the veteran voices on the team. Derrick, just because of his personality, he's not the kind of guy that tries to be a vocal leader in the locker room. He's a guy that kind of goes with the flow and gets along with everybody, and he's not the kind of guy. I mean, were Derrick and Jimmy best friends off the court? No, they kind of just went their own ways. They had their own people that they spent time with off the court, but the idea that they didn't like each other or that they didn't get along, I think, is not accurate.
Yeah, the stuff about Rose not necessarily being a vocal leader, I think, is interesting because, you know, Carmelo hasn't been like that for most of his career either. And, you know, the Knicks' best season while he has been in New York came in that one year where they brought in a bunch of guys that, I mean, they brought them in, obviously, for some of their skills as well, but also guys to just be, like, the presence in the locker room and the guys that people answered to. Like, I remember talking to Chris Copeland during that season, the 2012-13 season, and him talking about, you know, how much it meant to have guys like Rasheed Wallace and Kenyon Martin and Tyson Chandler around as just guys that were going to tell everybody what to do and set a tone.
And you're going to find out quickly that Joakim Noah is that kind of guy.
That's exactly where I was going. You know, obviously, that's something that's been talked about with Noah for a long time. And, you know, it's something that I think the Knicks consistently have searched for because it hasn't really been in Melo's personality to be a vocal leader. You know, he did it a little bit more last year because he thought that he had to, but it will be interesting to see how that happens again, or if that happens again this year, now that they have somebody who, you know, that is his personality, and that's a lot of what he brings to the team.
Right, and we kind of saw last year after, you know, the season kind of went off the rails. It was not great from the beginning, even when they started out and had a pretty good record. And I think part of that was the first week of the season, and this is, you know, not to get on a whole Bulls thing because I know this is Knicks folks, but basically Fred Hoiberg, the first week of the season, you know, has Noah come off the bench, and he, you know, goes and tells Zach Lowe that it was actually Noah's idea to come off the bench, and then Noah comes out pretty quickly and says, no, it actually wasn't my idea to come off the bench. I'm just doing what is best for the team. And that alienated Noah, and by alienating Noah, because everybody else in the locker room was so behind him for so many years, that kind of led to everybody else not really being on the same page either. And then you saw stuff really go off the rails in January when Noah had that shoulder injury. He had surgery, missed the rest of the season, and you know, then, you know, for most of the rest of the year after he has the surgery, he's away from the team. He's in rehab in New York, kind of just like trying to get back from the injury, and he's not around the team, and so you don't have that constant presence in the locker room. And you kind of saw after that just like how much, even if he's not playing or not playing well, just how much you're missing by not even having him around. So I think he's going to be really good for the Knicks locker room, even though I don't think it's the smartest deal from a years or money standpoint in terms of on-court contributions.
Yeah, what about, you know, what you actually saw from the two of them on the court? You know, obviously Rose only got on the court for 61 games over the prior 3 years before last season, but he did play 66 games last year. You know, a lot of people that, you know, were strongly in favor of the trade have focused on the fact that Rose put up, you know, they call it all-star numbers after the break. I wouldn't necessarily do that. You know, it was like 17-5 on, you know, middling efficiency, but certainly better than he was before the break. But then you look at, you know, so it was 21 games after the break that Rose played well. The last seven of those games, though, he was dreadful. Shot around like 32%, less than 30% from three. I'm curious what you saw from him, you know, on the court last year, if you thought there was a real difference between his play before the break and after the break.
Well, I don't think that the line of delineation is necessarily before the break and after the break. It's really more mid-December, because you have to remember, Jared, he, last summer, you know, we're going into it, you know, this is the first time, you know, that he's not, the first time in several years that he isn't coming into the summer, you know, rehabbing a knee injury, and he just has the whole summer to work out and work on his game. Half an hour into the first practice on the first day of training camp, he accidentally catches an elbow to the face from Taj Gibson and has to have surgery for a facial fracture and has to wear a mask for most of the first month and a half of the season. And he basically can't see out of one eye for most of the, you know, basically all of November. And I think it was a game on December, was it the 8th, the 10th, the 8th, somewhere in like the middle of December against the Clippers.
Wasn't it the Christmas game?
No, it wasn't the Christmas game. It was right before that, because I remember that, because I was at, it was a game in Chicago. The Christmas game was in Oklahoma City. I wasn't there, so I remember the game. It was a game against the Clippers, maybe a week or two before Christmas. I don't remember the exact date, but you know, he wears the mask for the first half of that game, and then he takes the mask off for the second half, and he plays a lot better the second half. And then he kind of goes on that little run of being, you know, getting to the basket a lot easier. And he's the kind of guy, I mean, just the kind of guy Derek is. He's never going to ever admit that anything is holding him back, even when he literally had, you know, he literally couldn't see out of one eye for most of, like, the first bit part of the season. And he was just like, nah, man, the mask doesn't bother me. I don't even notice it. And then he takes the mask off and he starts playing so much better right away. And so, I mean, I think part of it was that. But, you know, I just think in general with Derek last year, he didn't have a great year by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, the numbers kind of bear that out. But he was a lot more comfortable than he was the year before. And I know this because I was looking at some of his numbers right after the trade. I don't have them all right in front of me. But the year before, the last Thibodeau year when he played 51 games, there was a big thing all year about how, oh, he's shooting way too many threes. He's not, you know, he's settling for jumpers. He should be attacking more. And so I looked at, like, the difference in which percentage of his shots came, as threes. And so that year, 2014-15, he shot something like 27% from three, which is kind of in line with his average. It's not good. But 32% of his field goal attempts were three-pointers. Last year, he still shot around 27 or 28% from three, but only 14% of his field goal attempts were three-pointers. So I think somebody finally got through to him that, you know, you can't make these threes, so you should just not take them. It's become more of like a Dwayne Wade thing where, like, he can't make threes, so he just doesn't take them. And he got a lot more comfortable attacking last year. He got a lot more comfortable getting to the basket. He didn't really draw any fouls. And I don't know how much of that is just kind of perception or how much of that is, like, officiating. But he was getting to the basket more than he was the year before.
What did you think about the quality of those drives? Because, you know, during that MVP season, which is now six seasons ago.
Yeah.
You know, he was one of the best finishers in the league around the basket for a guard. But he hasn't really come close to that level of finishing ability since. I mean, do you think it's something to do with that knee? Do you think it's compensating in some way? Is it, you know, not really getting calls anymore so teams know they can challenge him stronger at the basket? What's going on, you know, with his... Because last year he only shot 51% inside 3 feet. That's 10% lower than he shot during that MVP season. And even, you know, 4% or 5% lower than the 2014-15 season, you know, 7% lower than the year after he won MVP. So I'm just curious, you know, what you see there.
I think it's a combination of all of those things. He was still, you know, again, the facial fracture kind of, even though, you know, that only affected him for, you know, up to half of the season, I think that affected it a lot. You know, he didn't maybe trust, you know, himself to, you know, finish right. He wanted to do it. I think he wanted to prove to people that he still could. But he just wasn't really, he wasn't getting great looks, but he was going there a lot more. And as a pug, you'd still rather have Rose trying to attack the basket than trying to jack up a three-pointer that you know he's not going to make.
Yeah, and look, Porzingis brought it up himself when he did an interview at Orlando Summer League. If Rose misses layups, as long as he draws a big guy over to him while he's going to take it, that opens up opportunities for him to follow them up with those tip dunks that he likes so much. You know, as long as he's drawing attention of big guys when he goes to the rim, even if he doesn't make it, I think it's okay.
Yeah, and I actually really like the fit of both Rose and Noah next to Porzingis if they stay healthy. Noah is exactly the kind of, you know, center that you should put next to Porzingis. He, you know, he's a good rebounder. He's, you know, you can compliment him on defense. He's a great passer. He doesn't really need a lot of touch. He doesn't really need to take a lot of shots. But my thing with Noah is I just don't know how much he has left physically.
Yeah, the years is really tough with Noah. Yeah. It's not necessarily someone that
fully
you
want
to be paying over the next 4 years fully guaranteed. If you're convinced that you need to have a center next to Porzingis, which, you know, I'm not necessarily convinced that you need to have a center because he's going to be a center fairly soon.
I think it doesn't hurt to have one
It doesn't hurt to have one, and certainly you don't want him necessarily to play center full-time yet, but probably within a couple of years you do, and then at that point Noah becomes a very expensive bench player. But for the time that you do want a center next to Porzingis, Noah's a very good fit, and that's something we've talked about on other podcasts. Rose, I am less convinced, is a good fit. He's not someone that looks to pass when he comes around screens. It takes touches away, I think, from Kristaps that should be going to him to have, you know, such a ball dominant point guard, especially one who's not necessarily, again, you know, looking up when he comes around those screens. Like, I don't think it's necessarily as big a boon for Kristaps' pick and pop game as people have portrayed it. But that said, you know, this is something we've talked about also. Giving the offense a test run with Derrick Rose for a year, like, there are worse things you can do than that.
Yeah, it's certainly a fine one-year gamble to take, and there are people who think that the Knicks gave up way too much to do that, and I think I'm shocked at how much from the Bulls, and I'm shocked at how much they were able to get back in the trade, but they didn't give up anything that the Knicks didn't, that is, like, it's impossible to recover from. So, could you talk to me a little bit about Jerian Grant, because I didn't watch a ton of the Knicks last year outside of, like, you know, sometimes they're on national TV. I wanted to see Porzingis. I didn't watch a ton of the Knicks last year, but what's Jerian Grant at this point, and what do you think he can become as somebody who watched him last year a lot more than I did?
Well, I watched him at Notre Dame also because he played Miami twice a year, so that was someone I was very familiar with already before he came into the league. And, you know, the thing to me about his first season was that he was not put in a position to succeed. You know, first of all, he was asked to very deliberately run the triangle offense and adhere to it very closely for a lot of the year. And if he didn't, he was sort of taken out. And the times when the Knicks would say, okay, we're going to ditch the triangle and we're going to run some pick and roll stuff, he wasn't really one of the guys that got a chance to do that. And then when Kurt Rambis took over, he didn't really get a chance to play at all because for some reason Sasha Vujicic had to be on the court. And, you know, Grant's best strength is his ability to see passes and to make those passes out of the pick and roll. And, you know, in that sense, I think it's a good fit for the kind of thing that Fred Hoiberg wants to do that he didn't necessarily wasn't necessarily able to do for a lot of last year because a lot of the guys in the team didn't fit very well. But, you know, if you give Grant a chance to do that kind of stuff, I think he can do well in that kind of system. But he was not in a position to succeed with the Knicks last year, and he didn't succeed, you know, until the very end of the season when they gave him more of a chance to play, and I think he averaged something like 15 points and 4 or 5 assists over the last couple weeks of the year and showed more flashes of the things that he's actually capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be good for him to not have to be playing behind, you know, past his prime point guard who can't shoot. And, oh, wait, I forgot that the Bulls just signed Rajon Rondo.
Yeah. Right. And look, that's... He should get more time than he did last year, at the very least.
I think he will, just because I don't think Fred Hoiberg is... I mean, if Tom Thibodeau were still... here, and as much as I love Tibbs, like, it is a criticism of him that he plays kind of the veterans too much. If Tibbs were still here, I think that Jose Calderon would be getting the primary backup point guard minutes, but I think Fred is actually going to give Jerian Grant...
I don't know if Tibbs would play Calderon, because Tibbs won't play guys that don't play defense, and there is nobody that doesn't play defense more than Jose Calderon.
He's still a veteran who Tibbs will say stuff about how he knows where to be, he knows how to, you know...
And that's definitely all true about Calderon. Like, he knows where to be. He can shoot. You know, I talked about with Seth Rosenthal, you know, he only takes shots that he knows he can make. So it inflates his field goal percentage a little bit. And the same is true of his passing, which inflates his assist to turnover ratio a little bit. Uh-huh. But he definitely knows where to be and knows what he's doing and knows how to run an offense.
Yeah, but I think Fred is going to be a little bit more willing to give Jerian Grant time and, you know, give him the leeway to play through some mistakes and really feel his way out at, you know, in an NBA offense than Tibbs would have been, and certainly more so than the situation that Jerian was in last year in New York.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, and they should give him an opportunity to do that. You know, I think he's 24 now, or maybe he is turning 24 soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's a little bit older, but that doesn't mean that he can't grow as a player, you know? Like, just because you're slightly older doesn't mean you're done, and that this is what you are forever. You know, there's still room, I think, for him to do things a little bit better just because once he's asked to do the things he's good at, that will open stuff up for him to do a little bit more. Like, he can work off the drive as well, not just throw those passes out of the pick and roll. You know, at Notre Dame, that's what he was best at, was attacking the basket, getting into the paint, and then either putting up one of his short jumpers or finding a passing lane. And, you know, he really did not get a chance to do that at all, even though he was by far the most aggressive Nick in terms of attacking the basket last year. If you look at those SportView drive stats and prorate them per minute played, nobody drove more than Grant.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, it seems like that's going to be a good fit if he gets, you know, the opportunity. Well, you and I are both going to be at Vegas next week for Summer League, so we'll have a chance to kind of see what, you know, how he looks, you know, playing next to some of those guys. It's actually kind of funny that the Bulls haven't released their whole Summer League roster yet, but their entire starting five is guys who are going to be actually on the roster this year. So, you know,
meanwhile, the Knicks have maybe one guy that will be on the roster on their Summer League team.
And then I haven't seen this. Porzingis isn't playing, right? Is he?
No Porzingis, no Hernan Gomez. They didn't draft anybody this year.
Is still on it?
Sorry?
Is Tanasis still on it?
I don't think Thanasis was there. I could be wrong. Clay Anthony Early is there, and Ron Baker is there, who they signed to an undrafted free agent contract.
Marshall Plumlee, right?
Marshall Plumlee. We're calling him Fredo Plumlee on this podcast.
Good to know. I'm with that.
It's very obvious why. If you haven't seen The Godfather, I don't know what you're doing, first of all, and go watch it. Do you want to talk some Robin Lopez, though? Because I could talk Robin Lopez pretty much all day, my man.
I am a big fan of Robin Lopez and have been for a while since he was with Portland. I think he's a good kind of center for the you know, I think he's more reliably, you know, just because of his health, I think he's more reliable than anybody that the Bulls had last year. And, you know, he's a good, you know,
he played all 82 last year.
He played all 82. He's been pretty durable throughout his career. He's a good rim protector. I'm
telling you now, don't tell Lopez that he's been pretty durable throughout his career.
Is he superstitious about that stuff?
I was talking to him for a story that I was doing on Porzingis' health and different things he should do to try to stay healthy throughout his career. Talking to a bunch of different big guys throughout the league about the kind of stuff they've done. And I talked to Pau Gasol, Marc Gasol, and I talked to Robin. And I said, you know, Kristaps is a big guy. You're a big guy. You've been, you know, mostly healthy throughout his career. And he was like, you got to go knock on some wood, man.
Like, well, right. I mean, especially because of all the injury problems that his brother has had.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely true. But, yeah, I mean, look, Robin is a good guy. Good guy to talk to if you talk to him about the right stuff.
Basically, the Simpsons and Harry Potter, right?
But you would think so. And sometimes if you catch him in the right mood. But a lot of times you got to talk to him about other stuff. You know, one of the things that is the biggest draw about him is that he has been pretty much, every year of the SportView era, he has been in the top 17 of the rim protectors, of the guys that challenge at least five shots a game at the rim. In the first year, he was second. In the second year, he was 17th. And in last year, I think he was either 7th or 9th. Can't remember which one off the top of my head. But if you need somebody to protect the immediate area around the basket, there are very few guys that do it better than Robin.
Yeah, the Bulls had basically none of that last year because Pau Gasol is not a rim protector. And Joakim Noah, you know, even, you know, he had been a rim protector in the past, but last year he had just lost so much of his athleticism that it was just not really a...
He was more of a guy that covered space than protected
exactly,
the rim
exactly.
last year.
Exactly. And then, I mean, the kid that they picked up out of Brazil last year, Cristiano Felicio, is someone that they like, but he's also, like, he's so young still. Like, he's not a guy they can count on. So I think getting a veteran guy like Robin Lopez, who's just solid and reliable, he's not flashy or anything like that, but I think he's going to be a good fit.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of people that, you know, are observers of the Knicks that don't think Robin does anything because, like, his career averages are like...
Well, his counting stats aren't very good.
Right, his career averages are like 8 points and 5 rebounds a game or something like that. He's only scored double-digit points, I think, twice. He's never hit double-digit rebounds, never hit 2 blocks a game. But he does a lot of things that not necessarily just don't show up in the box score, but also don't show up, like, even in on-off numbers and stuff like that. Like, he's a very good screen setter. He knows where to be in pick-and-roll defense and on rotations. You know, his teams are always better when he's on the court. That's obviously the kind of thing that shows up in on-off. And, you know, even though he's not a particularly good rebounder himself, like, he's not the one getting the rebound, consistently throughout his career, his teams have rebounded better when he's been on the floor. That was true in New Orleans, it was true in Phoenix, it was true in Portland, and it was true last year with the Knicks.
Yeah, I was looking up some of those numbers after the
trade.
But
and especially if you look at...
Robin Lopez was trash, and I'm just like, no,
right.
It's actually really solid.
If you look at, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge's rebounding numbers on-off with Portland, with Lopez on the court compared to when he wasn't, significantly better when Lopez was on the court. Porzingis was much better when Lopez was on the court last year in rebounding and shooting and all different kinds of things. You know, he's just a guy that, you know, even though he's not necessarily, like, he's not a passer, he's not, like, setting guys up for stuff, but he makes guys better through the things that he does on the court, through where he is on the court, through his screens, through all different kinds of things that he does, and that's valuable.
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, just, you know, circling it back to the Knicks a little bit, I think this was a trade that worked out well for both teams. I mean, if they end up giving up Jaren Grant, you know, you can live with that. He might end up being a good player. He's not the kind of prospect that's so, you know, can't miss that, like, you're gonna, like, regret it for the next 5 years if they let him go. And I think taking a 1 year gamble on Rose, because if this is, I mean, you remember he talked at Media Day last year, just unprompted, about how he's, you know, trying to set himself up to get a big contract. And so he knows that, like, if he's ever going to have a year where he goes back to any resemblance of, you know, what he was, you know, in the MVP year, it's going to be this year. It has to be this year. So I think you guys are going to, if he's healthy, I think the Knicks are going to get a good year out of him.
Yeah, it's just the likelihood of him being healthy based on, you know, the last 5 years is relatively small.
Well, sure, but if you're the Knicks, you're not going to be a contender anyway, and it's not like, I mean, who else were they going to go out and sign on the market? I mean, they just picked up Brandon Jennings yesterday, which I think is a nice gamble, but do you really want Brandon Jennings to be your starting point guard for the whole year? Is it like, if you can take a one-year gamble on somebody like Derrick Rose, I mean, that's just because of how good he used to be. I think that's, it's a reasonable thing to do.
I think it's reasonable. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, should have been the first choice, you know, because, and this is something I've talked about before, the best case scenario is that he plays well and they get back to the playoffs, and then they have to decide if they want to pay a 28-year-old with a history of knee injuries a whole lot of money. That's not necessarily a good place to be.
No, it's not, but on the other hand, Kevin Durant just signed with the Warriors, so I don't know how much any other team is going to win a championship anyway.
Well, I'm not even talking about championship aspirations. I'm just talking about building your team for the future and then the different kinds of things you can do with your roster. You know, I don't think they gave up nothing to get him. I think that's a complete fiction.
I agree. I think they did give up stuff. It was actually really funny. All the Knicks fans were like, hey, we gave up way too much. And all the Bulls fans were like, we got nothing back.
Right. Well, that's always, you know, fans will be fans.
By the way, Justin Holliday is an NBA rotation player.
Oh, talked about last year on the free agency preview podcast that I did with Brian Gibberman. Talked to him about that as well this year. I talked to Seth about that. You know, the Rose trade to me is not some massive blunder like it is to some other people. And it's also not some massive steal like it is to some other people. I think it's just a thing that happened. It's not necessarily the route that I would have taken. But I think that the way they built their team after that, you know, the guys that they went after, you know, again, not necessarily the route that I would have taken, but if you're going to take the route that they did, I think is about, you know, as good as they could have done for that plan.
Yeah, I really like pretty much every move the Knicks have made this free agency period, except for the Noah deal. I mean, Brandon Jennings
was a very good value.
Gamble, that's solid. Courtney Lee, I think, is a good fit. They brought back Lance Thomas. He had a nice year last year. Like, they're just making nice little, you know, minor moves that I think are going to work out well.
Yeah, and something that I have was wrong about, they can actually still bring back Langston Galloway by using his early bird rights. They just don't have the right to match any offer anymore. because they rescinded his qualifying offer. But, you know, you can still... excuse me. You can still bring him back if you want to on a contract that pays, you know, that starts at around $6.1 million a year. And that's pretty good.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything else that you want to get into here? Or is that it for you?
That's kind of it. You know, as always, check out, if you're a Bulls fan listening to this, check out Locked On Bulls on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us a 5-star review. Leave Jared a 5-star review for Locked On Knicks too.
Whoa! We don't call them 5-star reviews here. We call them Bill Walker reviews.
I'm with that too. Yeah, leave a Bill Walker.
Yeah, you gotta leave Bill Walker reviews. Do you have anything else that you want to promote?
Had a column up on Bleacher Report that went up last night about the Rajon Rondo signing, which I don't really understand what the Bulls are doing there, and I kind of get into some reasons why I don't think it's a good fit. Other than that, yeah, just follow me on Twitter at Hykin, H-I-G-H-K-I-N, and, you know, just subscribe to the podcast, and it's pretty easy to find me on the internet.
That's definitely true. You know, for the Knicks listeners, you can... find all the podcasts at iTunes under Locked On Knicks. You can subscribe. You can leave us a Bill Walker review. You can find the podcast on Audio Boom on the Locked On Knicks page. You can also find them on Stitcher for you Android users as well. If you want to have a question answered on the podcast, you can tweet me at JADubin5. You can tweet the podcast at Locked On Knicks. And that's also true if you would like to advertise on the program. Feel free to get at me at my Twitter at JADubin5. My email address is also in my Twitter bio if you'd like to get some advertising opportunities as well. And we'll be back with podcast tomorrow with, we're going to talk about Willie Hernan Gomez and then a guy whose name I'm going to learn to pronounce by the time the podcast starts tomorrow that the Knicks signed. He is a Lithuanian, and for now I'm calling him the Mindy Project, but... by tomorrow, I'll know how to pronounce his name. It's something like Mindaugas or something like that.
I think you should just keep calling him the Mindy Project anyway.
It's the Mindy Project or you're the Mind Now Dog. One of those two. I'll probably call him the Mindy Project all season, though.
I like that because, I mean, he's like an international player coming over. He's a project. Like, he's not a guy who's not going to contribute right away. So I think the Mindy Project
is 26 years old, though, so we'll see about that.
Not as old of a rookie as Pablo Prigioni was.
One will ever be as old of a rookie as Pablo Prigioni. Long live Pablo Cura. Sean, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Always good to talk to you, dude.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.